Hello everybody, this is Dr. Nadine and you are on the Animal Channel. I just apologize for being a little late. I had a hard time making a connection today. So thank you for your patience in getting online. Today we are talking about toxic plants. And the other part that I'd like to put on the table is not only toxic plants, but toxic woods. You know, that would be another thing to really look at for animals. And when this really came about as a topic is, you know, we're in summer and the heat comes up, and I have a pond outside my window, and I just noticed that they're doing a lot to really keep the algae under control. And I remember, was it last summer, the summer before, there was a really bad algae spread. And the sad part about this in water was that it was highly toxic to animals. And I can't tell you how many stories I read about, you know, people going in, letting their dogs go in the water. Dogs were playing fine, having a good old time, come out of the water, and within 30 minutes of coming out of the water, were dead. So we don't want to have that experience. It is just truly rough to be in a situation where, excuse me, where we're exposed to an animal that got into something that is toxic. On a personal note, when I had adopted Kianga, she's an African gray, for those of you who don't know her, and I wanted to give her more natural experiences, if that's a good word. And a friend had brought some daffodils over to my house, and they're gorgeous. I mean, just absolutely gorgeous. And so I gave Kianga a daffodil, and she had a blast playing with this little flower. I mean, she would carry it all around. She would shake it above her head. And then the next day, I started noticing a difference in her stool and then in her respiratory. And when we got to the vet, she ended up having to be on antibiotics for three rounds, so for quite a while. Just a rough thing to be part of. I've also been out to, one of my friends has a very large spread of land, and she came home one day, and one of her horses had died. And the only thing we could look at, there was nothing wrong with the horse, but there was a weed, I'm going to call it a weed, but a plant that was out in the fields that was highly toxic to horses. So in her situation, they had to go identify the weed and then go into a whole long process of how can we eliminate this weed naturally so that we're not, you know, endangering the ground, but that we're also protecting the other horses that live there, the other animals that live there. So that got me more interested in, wow, what is this about toxicity, and what can we do about it if we have an animal that gets into something toxic? What can we do? So there's a couple things. You know, if something is ingested, then there's charcoal. And that would be something that I would recommend all households have in the pantry, is some food-grade charcoal. And this is used for humans as well, but you mix the charcoal in with water, you allow them to drink it, and it will toxins bind to the charcoal, and then they're passed out the bowel, if you will. If you're dealing with, say, a cow or a sheep, you know, something like that, you may have to put the charcoal into a very large syringe and then force it down the throat. It's just not, I mean, it's black, you know, so it's not something that, you know, any animal's going to go and say, hey, check this out. You know, I'm going to look at my black teeth, look at my black muzzle. They're just not going to do that. So in the process, that's just one remedy, but in the process of looking at toxic things, we want to look at what is toxic in a house and what is toxic out of a house. Google is absolutely wonderful in the fact that you can do a Google search, and let's say you have rabbits, bunnies, and they're outdoor bunnies. You can do a Google search for the top 10 toxic plants for an outdoor bunny, top 10 toxic plants for indoor bunny. At the top of the call, we had mentioned also looking at wood. So anything that you're building a habitat out of, you want to make sure that what you're putting inside the habitat is non-toxic for whoever is inhabiting the area. When I was out at the wild animal sanctuary, these were amazing. I mean, when you see them from afar, they truly are amazing. But they're called thistle, milk thistle, and they're absolutely gorgeous. And while they were not toxic, they were very painful. And so if a lion or a tiger or bear, whatever, got the thistle into their paw, you'd have to trank the animal to be able to pull that out. So there would be many times where we'd have crews going into habitats and our sole job was to pull out those, big milk thistles. And again, they're absolutely gorgeous. And they're wonderful plants to have as pollinators for bees. They're wonderful because birds love the thistle seeds. However, from an owie perspective, those are one of those things that have to make sure that you're not putting something in the environment that is going to hurt an animal if they get out or if they get into that area. A couple weeks ago, I was out at somebody else's ranch, and we were looking at planting a bunch of things for just to make it more pretty, more beautiful. And I knew that the person really wanted to have a lot of pollinators. And so, my first thought was, oh, milkweed. Milkweed is wonderful. It's for butterflies. It's a pollinator. So, we were looking at how do we get some milkweed out here? Because they're great propagators, meaning they will multiply and multiply and multiply. But before we did that, the very first thing I did was I went out and did a Google search for, is milkweed toxic to horses? And sure enough, it was very highly every part of the plant, from the root to the leaf to the seeds, everything was highly toxic to horses. So out at their place, we had to make sure that anything that we put in the ground, anything that would have seeds and those seeds spread, had to be non-toxic for goats, horses, dogs, cats. They have some chickens, but we weren't really, looking at chickens. And again, if you go out and do a Google search, that's where you're going to get your, top answers. I recommend that you have some place in your home that you have the top 10 flowers, if you will, the top 10 plants, the top 10, if there's an herb or a spice, maybe, if you were using that with an animal. For example, I know that cinnamon is wonderful as a like a little spice to put on food for an African gray, but there's other spices that I would not use on the food. This is not toxic, but this is just a side thing, is if you like to feed your outdoor birds bird seed and you notice that the squirrels have taken over, safflower seeds, they are not toxic. Birds love them. Squirrels hate them. And so if you can mix safflower seeds in whatever you're creating for your outdoor birds, that'll help keep your squirrel populations down. And cayenne pepper, if you've heard me talk about, you know, I could put jalapenos and habaneros and any kind of pepper in the chop that I make. It's for a bird, it's just flavor. There is no heat at all. So for outdoor birds, you can put cayenne pepper on the seed, those little suet packs. And again, squirrels cannot stand cayenne, and that would be something that would help you deter. A couple flowers that I know, like at certain times of the year, so things that I can tell you right now, top a toxic plant is Easter lilies, rubrum lilies, any of the lilies. They're absolutely gorgeous. They're absolutely stunning. But if your cat or your dog or your bird or your horse ingests a lily, then they're going to have side effects. So in your research, you can also ask what the side effects are. And you can also do preventative and reach out to your vet before anything happens and just ask your vet, should something happen, what can I do for my animal? So in my household, I have three kitties, and they absolutely love to eat grass. They love to eat my spider plants. They love to eat anything green, and what it does is it stimulates their digestive juices, and then usually within 10-15 minutes that they eat the grass or whatever, they're upchucking. And it's a healthy thing for them. It's not a bad thing for them. It's just a healthy thing for them. So I make sure that when they go outside, especially if no one put pesticides out on the grass outside, that they get to eat a little bit, and then I just know when we come back in the house, I'm going to be cleaning up some juices, you know, digestive juices. And you can tell the difference between digestive juices in your animal and when they're puking. You know, there's definitely a difference there, like toxic vomit. Isn't that a lovely topic? Toxic vomit. Excuse me. So Easter lilies is a huge, huge toxic plant. But the other ones you really have to watch are at Christmas. And while, again, it may be absolutely beautiful to have these plants in the house, I've just learned to enjoy them when I'm in a store. And those are plants like amaryllis. Those are plants like poinsettias. Again, absolutely stunningly beautiful, but not if you have a cat in the house. So it's one of those things to just allow yourself to be knowledgeable about what you can and cannot do, have in your home, and then to know what's a good remedy. So we've already talked about having charcoal, you know, just to help them neutralize. It's going to help neutralize what's in the stomach. If you don't have charcoal, you can also use really diluted baking powder. And when I mean really diluted, let's say you use that an eighth of a teaspoon of baking powder to maybe a cup of water. Another really great neutralizer is apple cider vinegar. So you have to look at the weight of your animal. So again, I'm going to go to the difference between my African Grey, which is a pound, under a pound, and a cat, which is 13 pounds. If Kianga gets too much fruit in her body, then her digestive system is just nutso. So I can put one drop of apple cider vinegar in her bowl, and that will help her neutralize the juices in her stomach. Where with the cat, I may have to use more like a tablespoon of apple cider vinegar in the water. And that's going to be a hard one to get them to drink because it's so potent, you know, potent. What's interesting, though, is when you're out walking, let's say you're going for a hike or you're going for just a walk around the area, nature areas, animals usually know what's non-toxic and what's toxic to them. Now, it doesn't mean they're not going to want to go play in something that's toxic, but generally, they will not go eat, say, poison ivy. They will not eat poison oak. They will, I've watched dogs do this, oh, look at that cactus, isn't that fun, and bite into a cactus, not realizing that they're going to get a mouthful of thorns. You know, that wasn't toxic to them, but it sure was painful in the process of getting them out. And again, when you take your animal to the vet, they will most likely have to tranquilize them a bit, not put them fully out. They may, but they just have to put them out enough to where they can get in with pliers and, you know, get to the back of the throat and pull things out. So I really like having Google. And the other thing you can do is when you're in Google or whatever browser you use, is go to images and ask for images of the top toxic plants for your animal. So let's go to a dog. So top toxic plants for a dog, top toxic plants for a parrot, top toxic plants for a horse, and have them as images, and then that way, excuse me, that way you can save the image to your phone or your iPad and carry that with you so that you have that as a reminder that's easily to handle. And again, I just cannot emphasize enough, you think something's absolutely gorgeous, absolutely beautiful, absolutely wonderful, do a search on it first before you get all excited and plant it and then realize that you're in trouble. So these are not toxic. They are absolutely beautiful plants to have, cat mint or cat nip. So they're wonderful for cats to play in. But, you know, if you don't know what you're doing, they're going to spread like holy moly. And so if you have an area that needs to be naturalized, that's a really lovely plant to put out there so that you have catnip, cat mint spread around so the cats will have fun. But if you wanted to contain it so that you only wanted it in a certain portion of your yard or your garden, then my recommendation is that you would actually keep it in a pot. You would not put it in the soil, because those, like I said, you will find those everywhere. And it appears, looking at one of my neighbors, it appears the more you attempt to get rid of one of the mint family, it's going to take you years to stop pulling out little seedlets, you know, little tiny plants. So in this concept of really looking at what's toxic, the other part that you might want to know about is which hit the nerves, which hit the blood, which hit the respiratory, which hit the digestive, so that you better know how to balance that out. So we've already talked about charcoal, which neutralizes, baking soda, which neutralizes, and what was the third one? Apple cider vinegar, which neutralizes. There was one year I was so excited. I was getting a aromatherapy kit, and I was so excited because I'd wanted one for years. You know, I'd go into other people's businesses or homes and just, you know, to smell eucalyptus in the background or smelling lavender in the background was really wonderful. Until. And I can't tell you how many people with dogs have said, oh, yeah, I put in X number of drops in my aromatherapy, and all of a sudden my dog is completely lethargic. My dog is not responding. And so the first thing we had to do was go look at what do you have in the house that's toxic. And the top ones are aromatherapy and scented candles. And the person had both of them going, and so I had her to completely turn off the air aromatherapy and take the candles themselves outside, open the windows. It was winter, but open the windows to get some fresh air moving in the house, and then let's see what's happening. And it didn't take very long before her dog started to perk up. So it, that was a really direct looking at the fact of, oh, okay, I got into something that hit the respiratory system. Another thing you can do with animals, especially if you're in the house, and so let's go for more for cats and dogs, bunnies maybe as well, but if there's a respiratory thing happening, is to take them into a bathroom that has a shower, close the door, turn the shower on, and turn it all the way on hot, and it's going to gradually build the steam up in the room. And as that builds the steam up in the room, it's going to help them clear whatever toxins are in the respiratory tract. So a bird has air sacs, a cat has lungs, a dog has lungs. It's going to help them clear whatever is in their respiratory pathways. And then you can turn the water off, but leave the animal in the room until the steam completely dissipates. When I got Sweet Car, and she's been with me since 2008, I believe, 2008, 2009, right around in there, and I was told, no, she's perfectly healthy, nothing wrong with her, and she went from where she'd been for months into my home, and just the shock of going from being around a lot of cats to being in my home that didn't have that same level of a lot of cats, it hit her respiratory tract. And so we were up in the shower multiple times, and I had never seen a cat do open mouth breathing before, ever. You know, I've seen where a cat will open their mouth to scent the room, but that's not what this was. This was open mouth breathing like I cannot get enough oxygen in my lungs. And by going and having her in the shower and allowing that steam to help her release what was going on in her lungs, we were able to make it through that. So was that a toxic thing? Yes and no. I mean, it's not like she got something toxic in my house. It was the lack of toxins that allowed her body to let go. I'm sure you've had that happen to you, someone you know, where you hang on, you hang on, you hang on, you hang on, and finally you have like spring break or Christmas break or Thanksgiving break, and you can go and go, oh, I can finally let go and let my body heal, and all of a sudden all this other stuff is coming out. And it's just that what we call a healing crisis. So since the healing crisis came up, usually in a healing crisis, there's a 7-day window, and it's usually when things are just the worst that they could possibly get. That's really what you're looking for, is that last day of, oh my God, it can't get any worse, because that's when it's going to flip and the healing process can actually step into place. So it's really helpful if you keep a journal, like this is what happened, day, time. Here's what I did, day, time. Here's what the outcome was, day, time, so that you can look and go, all right, we've only been in this for 3 days. We have a couple more before we can actually turn the corner and have the better thing happen, you know, the healing part happen. Now, not always are you going to find that, right? Not always are you going to be able to save the animal, if that's the right way to say it. Sometimes, just like humans, the animal is on their way out and they will choose the fastest exit. Now, I'm not saying that that's always the case, but I have watched numerous times where a human has not wanted to help the animal transition, and the animal will take the easiest exit out of the body. So they may get into something that they know is toxic just to help them out. But that's for a different time, a different conversation. What we want to look at, though, is how can I serve my animal? And again, we want to be able to neutralize. So from a respiratory perspective, the shower. Let's say your animal just gets something on their skin and you can see that, wow, they have a rash going, then that's when I would do a bath. And a lot of times if your animal gets into something that's itchy, really itchy, you can do a oatmeal bath, and you can literally take the oatmeal, like go into your kitchen, get a bunch of oatmeal, grind it into to pulverize it, like put it in a coffee grinder and pulverize it, put some water on it to make it gooey, and then rub that all the way through the animal's body. You can put a little shampoo with that if you want to, but rub that all the way through the animal's body and then rinse that off. And that will help them neutralize, again, what's in the skin and neutralize the itching, really neutralize the itching. There's another thing I wanted to share here. I just lost my thought, and I didn't write it down, so I didn't have it in my notes. But, aloe vera. So that's another, again, gentle neutralizer. The thing with aloe vera is you got to understand it's sticky. And so if you put it on an animal's body, you're going to have to dilute it, because otherwise what they're going to do is they're going to lick it or scratch it to get the sticky off their body. So if you super dilute, let's say, a capful of aloe vera to 32 ounces of water and then spray it out on your fingers, and if you still have sticky on your fingers, you need to dilute it some more. Because what we're looking for is the neutralizing and the healing properties of the aloe vera versus the sticky part of the aloe vera. So aloe vera is really wonderful for, again, skin issues, cuts. If you have, let's say your dog got into brambles and there's cuts everywhere, you can put aloe on that and it'll help heal. Castor oils would be my number one go-to if we're wanting to heal from the inside out. So, and that's just an offshoot. If you have questions about any of this, shoot me an email and we'll get the information out to you in either another call, or we can do it in the classroom, your private classroom. So other plants that are really toxic, somebody had something that was this gorgeous plant on a little app called Buy Nothing. And I thought, oh, that would be so wonderful to have in the house. And I was looking at, oh, yeah, put my name up for it, please. Put my name up for it, please. And it's like, no, you need to go back and do some research. And while it was not one of the top 10 toxic plants, there was still something about it that was toxic to cats. So why do that, right? Why do that? Especially if you know they're curious and they're going to start chewing on something. It's like, yeah, let's just not be silly. Let's just not be silly. So I would say, you know, our animals are so curious. I would look at the ground, you know, see what's in the soil around you. When you go for walks, know, identify plants. So I believe if poison ivy has like three, it's a three-petal plant. Look at what toxic plants look like before you go out on your walk. A lot of times you're going to run into something that's not toxic. So it's just knowing what you're getting yourself into. But there was another thing that I wanted to do that was toxic. Woods. So if you're doing a habitat, so let's say you're building bridgeways for your crabs, or you're building bridgeways for your birds, I don't think you have to worry about that for cats and dogs. But if you notice, yeah, my body's telling me no. When I look at like kitty scratching posts, they put sisal rope on there because it's really wonderful for the cat's nails. It's wonderful for the talons because they can put their talons in and it helps them, you know, rip the old sheaths off. So it's not that they covered the wood with sisal rope because the wood was toxic, right? They just wouldn't do that. So that I wouldn't worry about that one. It's more if you have crabs, if you have snakes, geckos, rabbits, birds, things that you're building bridgeways for, is to make sure the wood you're using is on the non-toxic list. And again, when you do a search for even images, there's 100 woods that are perfectly fine. And then you're going to get the list of woods that are toxic. So it's not that you're going to have to really search hard for the perfect wood. There's always going to be plenty of wonderful options for you. Even with flowers, I'm going to go back to Kianga because I was so disappointed with my daffodil. And I thought, oh, so that means I'm never going to get to share flowers with her. Well, that's not true. So when we go outside, she loves petunias. And she'll get into the petunia patch, and she will sit there and rip them apart and throw them all over the place. And she'll run into vinca and rip them apart. And she likes carnations. So what we've ended up doing when I make my planters for the summer is I make sure I put lots of things that she will enjoy. And she likes things with, like, spicy smells. So, like I said, carnations. There's some other flower I found that is of the, like, petunia family, I think. Can't tell you what it's called. I don't remember. But it was so nice, and she absolutely loves it. So it's just doing little things like that that allows you to have more of an enriching environment for them. And then let me just see. I'm amazed that I don't have more to say. Isn't that odd? It's like Nadine always has something to say. But I think that's a lot of information in a short period of time. If you have a question, let me just see here. You all have my email, drnadine111@gmail.com. I have the ability to flip over and look at my email at the same time. So let's just take a pause here and see if anyone has a question that you want to email in. And I will answer it live. And I'm not seeing any questions come through yet, but maybe you're still constructing your question. Oh, a very interesting question. So this person is writing in and asking, if my animal dies from eating something toxic, how can I bury them? If they die, how can I bury them? That's a really, really, really good question. So it depends on what they were given. If it's a plant, you can put them right in the ground, and it will not harm Mother Nature because it's still one of her plants. But if, let's say, your animal was put down, I'm going to go to horses, that let's say they were given a serum of, in like a big, huge syringe, there's something in that is highly, it took their heart out, but that horse cannot be rendered down for anything. And so they would have to be cremated. And so a lot of times, and I really appreciate you for asking this question, a lot of times, you know, something is put in the ground that's toxic and then it hits the water table and it affects all the water. And so everybody who's drinking that water would then be affected by what was in the animal. So I guess I would say the safest route would be to have the animal cremated. And, you know, there's a lot of places that will cremate now. If you live on land, that you can do it yourself. If you put the animal deep enough, you may be able, you just have to look at where the water table is. And I definitely have to say I am not an expert in that area at all. So you might have to look at local laws for where you live as to what you're allowed to do or not allowed to do. But good question. Let me just go see if there's any more questions that came through on the email. And I'm not seeing any. So let's just do a recap of toxicity. Know from the toxic perspective, is it the leaves that are toxic? Is it the roots that are toxic? Is it the flower that's toxic? What part of the plant? Is it all parts of the plant that are toxic? Is it an outdoor plant, an indoor plant? So that's the first thing that I would recommend you know. Keep the list handy. Know what they look like so that you're never surprised. Have a conversation with your vet to know if, wow, if my dog or my cat or my bird or whatever got into this, what do I need to do on my side before I bring my animal into you? And a lot of times you can, by washing your animal, showering them down, you can really help alleviate a lot of their reaction to and their pain. The other neutralizing things you can do is charcoal, activated charcoal. You can do baking soda. You can do apple cider vinegar. Those all will neutralize. None of them really taste that great, you know, and so you may have to put it in a syringe and put it down the throat. But the idea of those is that it would help neutralize. If you're doing apple cider vinegar, you know, you can, like I said, you can put that in water, just in their water bowl, but you want them drinking water. And so if you notice they're avoiding that water bowl, you probably have way too much vinegar in there, and all that they're smelling is the acidity of the vinegar versus the healing properties of the balancing that they can do. The other thing I just totally believe in is the steam shower. And I have another gal that I work with, and she says, oh, my cats freak out, you know, when we're in the bathroom. So go in there with them. You know, be in there with them. Show them that it's not a big deal. Take them in there, not just when they're not feeling well. Take them in there when they are feeling well. Just let it be part of, oh, let's go into the bathroom today. Ooh, let's have the shower on today. And you don't have to do the full 20 minutes. You can be in there for 5 minutes. Have them in the shower when you're taking a shower. You know, there's all kinds of ways you can acclimate your animal to things that are different. So toxic plants, toxic woods, knowing some solutions. If it's a toxic wood, I would not bring it into the house at all, just period, don't do it. I would not put it in an indoor cage or an outdoor cage. And for those woods that you know, you can, again, we have this app here called Buy Nothing. I'm sure it's anywhere around the United States has it. You can put the woods that you have up for somebody else and just let them know, hey, you know, I got this wood. I thought it was going to be really exciting, but it's toxic to my African gray. Would anybody else like this? You know, that's one solution. I'm just not thinking of anything else that would be of value to add to this conversation. So let me go back to the email and just see if anyone else wrote in. I don't see anybody. So let's bring this to a close. Thank you for joining me. Hopefully you got some good information, and we'll see you in July. Happy day. Bye, everyone.